Backseat Producers, episode number 125, A Clockwork Orange.
Hey, this is Tony, and I'm just going to take a minute here to break in before we go ahead and jump into our episode to talk to you about something kind of serious. A good friend of the podcast, T. Morris, on January the 6th, as I'm recording this, that was last Wednesday, 8 days ago, his wife passed away unexpectedly. There was no warning. It was very sudden. And T is now a single parent. They had a five-year-old daughter together, and T is left now to raise five-year-old Sonic Boom all on his own. And the community that surrounds us, podcasting and the authorship community, because T is also an author, and the community has rallied to support T and help him out in this time of need. As of this point, I'm recording this on January the 14th, $17,000 has been raised to help T with immediate expenses, and then any other funds go into a trust fund for Sonic Boom. If you get the chance, please visit theboomeffect.org. There's a charity event that's being run through that site. There's going to be a webathon, an auction, and it's all going to take place the last weekend in February. I'm going to be part of it. We're donating stuff to the cause. So if you get the opportunity, please visit the website, theboomeffect.org. You'll see some information in the show notes. And you'll probably also hear this message a couple of times throughout the next couple of podcasts. You've probably heard it couple of podcasts before this, and you'll probably hear a couple of podcasts after this. I apologize if this gets repetitive or boring, but this is T. He's a good friend of the show and a good personal friend. I really consider him a personal friend. So if you have the means, if you have the opportunity, please check out theboomeffect.org. Heck, maybe there's something that's going to be donated that's being auctioned off through that site that you really want. I've seen the list, and there's some really great stuff coming up. So, with that said, on with the show, and hope you enjoy the episode.
This is Tony.
This is Darren.
And this is Daryl.
And this is David.
And we are the Backseat Producers. And I figured you called me a dick on Twitter the other day, so I wasn't going to call you one now.
Because you're an ass. Some guy sent us an email, and he was really nice. And so I was like, man, it's really awesome when people send us emails like this, because it's validation. And like, seriously, when I'm like, ugh, I don't want to drive out to Tony's, because it's like 20 below. You have the wind is blowing, and on a dark and stormy night.
With the dogs howling.
Yeah, with the dogs howling and all that kind of stuff. And then I was like, you really make it worth it, dude. And then Tony's like, I can't say it better than he did. And then proceeds to say it better than I did. I'm like, you dick.
Not a broken camera. Just didn't.
No, we got lazy tonight, so there's no camera tonight.
Which is too bad, because we got the whole place decorated like the Corova milk bar.
Yeah.
Tables and all.
I'm drinking straight from the teat.
So since apparently it's become part of the show notes, we should mention what we're drinking.
Drink check.
I'm drinking Red Stag, which is fantastic. It's a Jim Beam bourbon that is infused with black cherry. It is awesome.
Oh, me? Water. I'm going to that's water.
It's pure water.
Pure water, but then
pure
again, I've
Colombian
got
Colombian water.
Then again, I got a 40-minute drive too. So you know, there's
you better
that.
You better go to the bathroom before you leave. That is what that means.
So, I mean, you know, if I had 5 minutes to drive and get here, I'd probably throw down with you a little bit. But 40-minute drive, and then me in Illinois when I should, you know, when I'm usually in Missouri. I don't want to take a shot chance.
I've got farmer-owned Prairie Farms milk. Infused with vitamin D. It's what plants love.
Yeah, we know how to live.
I'm not drinking anything.
Again, I'm the lush.
Again, I'm waiting for Chris or Sarah to be like, oh, I'm coming out for this episode. Oh, well, then you can give me a ride and I'll play the drinking game with myself.
One of them may be coming next week.
That's good.
That was a rumor I heard.
I hope it's Sarah. Because if Chris goes, then he can just come to my place and drive with me. That's not the ideal situation. Sarah hates being driven, so she shows up at my place, and then she's like, well, I have to drive. Sold.
Yeah, so next week we're doing Gremlins for our Christmas special.
Keeping in a fine tradition.
Mm-hmm.
So speaking of, I was reading the, trivia, IMDb on Harry Potter. Just came out yesterday.
Right.
Half-Blood Prince. And so at the end of the movie, Dumbledore falls out of the tower, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the IMDb trivia is like, Alan Rickman was so thrilled with this scene because finally he said, it wasn't me who fell out of the tower. I was like, that's awesome.
That's fantastic.
God, I would love to work with that guy.
We should have him on the show.
All right.
We should get somebody on that.
Yeah. I got people for that.
Yeah. Your people get in touch with his people, and I'm sure he can get him on here.
Tallulah, you have an assignment. It's Project Mayhem.
Bring us Alan Rickman.
Bring us Alan Rickman. I don't care if he's slightly used, because I reckon that you'll break him in on the way, so.
All right.
It's weird to me that neither of you have segued into the movie since you couldn't stop talking about it before we started recording.
You guys are the normal host. I would figure you would want to go ahead and bring it up first. So
define normal.
Me, I'm here. This is odd because you normally that's an annual appearance for me. So unless you can say the weekly appearances on the site. But,
yeah. Well, yeah. I mean the weekly appearance, and we didn't really mention that last week, and we probably should have. If you read the website, like 95% of the text on the website, Darren is responsible for, because he does what, like 99.9% of the movie reviews.
Many reviewers come and go, but only one that stayed
yep.
all the way through.
And in addition to his writing talents, he also slings a mean rapidograph.
Yeah, well, you know. You will see my work if you're listening to the show later through iTunes. You will see my work come up as the logo design for the show.
Yeah, he did the logo design for the show. All right, so high level review.
I don't want to go first.
All right, go for it.
Oh, I love the movie. It's one of my all time favorites.
All right,
I enjoyed it, but it's kind of weird watching it something this far from 30 years.
Yeah, it's I can't imagine how shocking it would have been at the time. And now
it was a big deal.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, I can imagine it was ridiculously shocking at the time.
And especially in Britain, it was really shocking at the time.
Yeah. But I mean, by today's standards, it's an interesting commentary, and it's weird how, I guess, how timely the commentary is even now, the social commentary in the movie.
How timely?
Yeah.
Relevant?
Yeah, it is. I believe it is. But
I don't disagree with you. I mean, I think it's something that stands the test.
Yeah, too. But the delivery of it shows its age. That's going to happen.
Here's how I feel about the movie. This movie will always have a special place in my heart because it is the first time I saw a vagina. That is not a joke. Other than that, I loved the movie.
You can't shock me. You just can't.
Not trying. I'm just being real.
This is not surprising.
It wasn't even a joke.
Explain so many things.
I'm opening up to you, Darren. I'm opening up. Please.
He's bonding. He's bonding. He's bonding. And he's starting to rub his legs.
That's right. You know, getting excited. Oh. Hey, Chevy, are you back from Japan? I guess I shouldn't wait for an answer. All right. In true Backseat Producers fashion, let's go through the cast, because does anybody here disagree that
it's Malcolm McDowell's Malcolm McDowell's greatest part of all time?
I agree.
He was amazing. He really was.
He even says it's his greatest part he's ever played, and he's forever grateful to Stanley Kubrick for seeing him in that. I mean, it's one of his earliest films. Before that, Malcolm McDowell was known for being in a couple movies from another British filmmaker and playwright named Lindsay Wagner. No, I might have the name wrong. It's Lindsay something. But
Lindsay Wagner, wasn't that the Bionic Woman?
But I think it might have been this guy's name. Too,
okay.
So I can't remember for sure. But he was Kubrick's arm in a movie called If, which was about teenage rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
And Kubrick said at the time that if he had not seen Malcolm McDowell, he wouldn't have made the movie.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, the one testament to him is they use a futuristic slang, and basically it's just changing around some of the words, in some cases shortening them to their base meaning, which
with a lot of is pretty.
There's a lot of Russian.
There's a lot of Russian. Yeah, there's different things thrown in, but that's not unusual. And if you look at the way language evolves and talk to people who do that. That's common, you know. That's commonplace in our language that we say things more and more simply the farther we go on, and that he was able to pull that off and didn't make it sound stilted at all.
No, not at all.
It was just a real natural delivery, as if he was speaking that way his whole life. I thought that was a real testament to his acting.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds totally natural mm-hmm. from him, and.
You know, a little of the old in and out.
Well, one of the things we've got to get into with this, though, because you bring it up all the time, the fact that you don't like narration in movies, and this movie is entirely narrated.
Yeah.
And I love the narration in this thing. And I think
the movie doesn't exist without narration.
It doesn't. Yeah, and part of that is because he makes...
It's the
narration makes you complicit with the film.
Yeah.
I mean, he's basically treating you, the audience. Alex DeLarge, played by... McDowell is treating you, the audience, as his friends, and he's telling you his story.
Yeah, it's the same style of narration as Fight Club.
No, I'm going to say no because it doesn't speak specifically to the audience the same way that Clockwork Orange does. He actually calls out you, dear listeners.
Yeah. And me, the narrator.
So I am the narrator. Your faithful narrator. Your friend. You know, he tries to make himself sympathetic as he's giving the narration instead of just relaying the story, which is what was done in Fight Club.
I suppose we should say what this story is about, though. So,
we'll get to the plot. We'll get to the plot.
I have immense respect for Malcolm McDowell because he was beat to shit during the filming of this movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like... He was blinded, and then, like...
Yeah, he got his cornea scratched.
Couldn't see.
He was almost drowned.
Like, he got hit with... In one of the fight scenes.
Well, when he's being dunked underwater, I mean, they are hitting him a little bit there with the batons.
Yeah, but his breathing apparatus failed there, because he's under for
a full minute and a half. Yeah, that's a long time.
Oh, wow.
And then something else happened in one of the fight scenes where he got hurt and,
I don't think it was real bad, though, because he also says that there were stunt doubles for him in the big fight scene at the start.
And as soon as Stanley Kubrick found out that he had a fear of snakes, he immediately put a snake into the movie.
Yeah, on the same token, though.
Kubrick,
yeah, but awesome. Yeah, oh, really? At the same token, when they were looking for women for one of Alex's fantasy scenes where he's dreaming about reading the Bible and he's fancying himself sitting there amongst naked handmaidens getting grapes fed to him, he invited Dal over, too, to pick out breasts.
Nice. What, you and you, not you.
Well, reading some of the trivia and stuff, I get the impression that Kubrick and McDowell became friends. Like, they played chess all the time.
Yeah, they were very good friends.
There were a lot of scenes where Kubrick got bored filming, and then McDowell started doing things. Like, the whole belching thing was, like, he can belch on command, and then amused Kubrick to no end.
The very opening of the movie... Where it's this great shot, this terrific shot. It's close up of Alex, and the camera pulls back and to kind of show you this the milk bar that they're in, and Alex takes, you know, kind of tips his glass, and the story that goes with that is Kubrick came up to him afterwards and said, "You realize you just toasted the audience?" He did, and according to what McDowell says anyway, he says, "Yeah," because he wanted to let the audience know they were for a hell of a ride.
Goddamn, was it right?
Oh yeah.
And then one of the more shocking scenes of the film, the entire rape and attack on the writer and his wife. That was supposedly being one of these scenes where nothing was really coming together. when it was first being done, Kubrick's words were like, "Malk, where's the magic? Where's the magic?" And then he says to him one day, he goes, "Malk, can you dance?" And then and he says, "Well, can I dance?" And he starts doing Singing in the Rain. And the moment he did that, supposedly Kubrick takes Malcolm McDowell. They run out. They go to his home, and they buy the rights to Singing in the Rain.
That's fantastic.
Just like that. You know.
Another thing I found interesting about this is that they go so far with like the rape scenes and the violence, but they pull the punches. Like they still pull punches in the movie. The second woman who's killed. In the book, she is like a helpless old woman, and they change.
You've read the book. I've never read Burgess's book. I've never read it.
So there's actually two different versions of the book.
Yeah, I've never read it.
But when we get to the end, we can talk about that. And so they pull the punch there because they make it like. She is strong enough to fight back.
Right.
So they make that whole scene. And then when he has the sex with the two chicks, they're actually 10-year-old girls that he drugs and then rapes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they pulled the punches in the movie.
Well,
although, which was weird because they did not pull, like, you don't get the sense that they pulled punches. You could, because they went for shock value hard.
Well, in the book, now, again, I haven't read it, but in the book, though, from what I understand, isn't Alex supposed to be, like, 15 or something like that?
Yeah, he's younger.
Yeah, he's technically younger than what Malcolm McDowell was. So.
All right, I guess we can roll into the story, then. It's a pretty simple story.
Fairly, but, I mean, there are plot points that need to be touched on because they come up later.
Yeah, but it starts with the high. Like they go out, they're in a bar. It's a mini gang, mm-hmm. four dudes.
It's a slightly this movie came out what 70, 71, 71. Something like that. So yeah, let's say that it takes place probably maybe 10, 15 years ahead of that. I don't know. Maybe the book has a specific date. I have no idea.
I don't remember.
I don't remember when it is.
But yeah, they're supposed to be slightly ahead of.
Right.
Temporary time.
Well, and yeah, they give the sense that society has gone downhill.
Yeah, in a way.
A lot of society still exists as it exists now, but
they don't imply that. They flat out tell you that.
Right. But as far as like the amount of time that's passed.
Oh, okay. Yeah, cuz the whole scene with the bum is just heavy-handed. Yep, society sucks now. Deal with it.
Right. Okay. But you get the sense that it is only within a generation or so. Because
he's like, it didn't used to be this.
Yeah, way. That old man knew a time when it wasn't like this.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's about this young guy who's named Alex DeLarge. And he has his gang. And Alex is really doesn't have a whole lot of morality about himself and gets into a lot of trouble.
He has
his own sense of morality.
Yeah, he has his own limits.
Kind of pleases him, I guess.
But I don't even think that that's accurate because he doesn't want to kill.
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I'm just speaking out of turn. Yeah, because he did not want to kill the cat lady.
Yeah, and he was surprised and shocked when it happened. Mm-hmm. He was like, "No, I checked. She was fine." Oh no, she died, dude. Oh shit.
That sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, he says a little more eloquently than that.
Yeah, but he has a great respect for some, like Beethoven. He has a great respect for that.
Absolutely.
Even so much.
Ludwig van.
Yeah. Our old buddy Ludwig van. Like, he even beats the shit out of one of his drogues because he interrupted, or he was making fun of that woman who was singing it.
Yeah.
He's like, stop being a dick. So the movie opens and, like, maybe the first half hour, 45 minutes of the movie is the first night you meet the guy. And him going out and doing stuff. They beat up a bum. Then they go.
They beat up
racing down the highway.
Then they go racing down the road.
They meet a rival gang.
They meet a rival gang. And they beat the hell out of them.
Yeah, they're about to rape a girl, and then they
beat her up. Big fight.
Not because they want to stop the rape, but because they want to be dicks.
Yeah, and they close their night off with an attack on an author and his wife.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a fun-filled evening for them, beating up a helpless old man.
Alex is the leader of the gang, and members of the gang don't necessarily like where Alex is taking them because they see Alex is not looking at a big picture, and so they just
yeah. But you don't really get the sense that those guys really care so much about a big picture.
Yeah, but it's like, until that's weird because you don't get the sense from any of the other
than they tell you
other guys that they have any sort of introspection like he does.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was really heavy handed in that, and part of it comes from the fact that it's Alex telling Alex's story, and Alex only cares about Alex's self.
He's
not going to tell you what Dim thinks, or he's not going to tell you what Georgie thinks.
As far as what Alex is concerned with. They don't matter. So even if they are introspective and even if they are thinking about the big picture,
it doesn't matter.
He doesn't care because it's not his picture, so it's not a big picture. It's their little picture.
But it's a weird thing because they're like, you're not thinking big picture enough. And he's like, okay, well, what are you going to do when you get this big score that you want? I don't know.
Well, Alex's response is, look, if you need a car, don't you?
Just take one.
Just take one.
Yeah. You know, just go pluck it off the tree.
Yeah.
So then he beats the crap out of his own gang.
That was fantastic.
That was awesome.
Then I had an idea.
Yeah, the whole scene where, like, they're walking slow-mo with the camera and he's like, it got me thinking.
Yeah. Well, we heard Beethoven.
Yeah, then I heard Beethoven and then I got an idea. He just jump punches.
He puts his gang in place. In the place. I mean, they're trying to usurp him. And
I'm the boss.
Yeah.
This is the way it is.
Right. Well, he does come up. He thinks he comes up with the ideas, but at the same time, once he's done with this,
he
asks them what their idea was.
But before this, I mean, we actually see the truant officer.
We see his family life. We see his mom and his dad.
Yeah, and we see how they pretty much just let him do
whatever he wants
through his filter. I mean, that's the one thing you can say about this movie is what you see is all filtered through Alex's lens. So whether his parents really are like that or if that's just how he wants you to perceive them is up for interpretation.
Yeah, I know. It's one of those things where I've heard like a criticism for this before is that Alex is maybe in some ways just not necessarily as rounded as he could be. You know, where's the explanation for? I'm not saying I have a criticism. I'm saying I've heard this criticism.
I don't understand how you could not accept that as truth.
I think even if it's his perception,
I think there's an explanation right there in the movie for how Alex is the way Alex is.
Right, and I think the one thing we can say that Fight Club and A Clockwork Orange do have in common is in their own ways the narrators are both unreliable. We can't really trust the story that Alex is feeding us because it is his story. And he is trying to make us sympathetic to his cause.
Yeah, he's the hero of his story.
Right.
So, yeah.
Even as he is beating and raping people, he's doing it in a heroic way.
Heroically raped her.
Yeah. And,
well, it's not, wow.
And it's all
it's
about not, Ludwig van. You know, we're going to
musically rape her. then
we're going to have a little in and out and do singing in the rain kick the crap out of somebody because
I'm dancing. The scene with two girls.
I use my hero.
That super high speed two girl thing was weird.
No, it was awesome.
It was.
You would have sex with one. The other one would get dressed.
Who was getting dressed?
He would go back in a dress or the
Yeah, and there's a story about that too that Kubrick kind of fancied the brunette a little bit, so McDowell paid a little more attention to her.
So, do you know the whole thing was filmed as one long sequence?
It was
28 minutes long.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. One take.
Wow.
Although they did it 27 times.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah, well, McDowell endured a lot for that film.
Oh, I bet he did.
But there's a lot that also say, boy, what a hard job.
Yeah.
He suffered.
Yeah. Suffered for his art.
Suffered the tortures of the damned.
I just said I've jumped too many times in this movie.
So we're at the point where we have this setup for Alec. He's a violent, nihilistic young man. Only cares about himself. He doesn't care about anything other than getting his own pleasures or his own satisfactions.
And Ludwig van.
And he seems to be a fairly educated young man, or at least for procedure, because he tends to talk a lot more in complete sentences than the others.
They imply it, one, from the eloquence of the introspection, two, because the music selections. It's obviously a pointer to class.
Well, and Deltoid even says you've got not too bad a head on your shoulders, too, at one point.
Yeah.
Too.
Right. Again, though, how much of this is filtered through Alex's lens?
I don't think he would make up or lie about Ludwig van.
No, I don't think he would make it up, but I think he would push himself towards something that he thought was classy to give an air of classiness about himself. Right. Whether he liked it or not, it was something that he saw as a status symbol.
He respected it. Mm-hmm.
He did, yeah. He absolutely respected it.
Oh, no, he liked it. He likes it a lot. I mean, because considering later on in the film what they use as a stimulus to kind of make it
right.
sick, it's something that actually turns him on, and so that's what they turned around, and so the music ends up being something that he loved and that they used against him later on. It's not a matter of he's not liking Ludwig. He's not liking Beethoven to put on airs. He does like Beethoven.
He specifically likes the ninth, though. He doesn't like Beethoven. He likes the ninth.
He does like Beethoven. He says he likes Beethoven. He really likes the ninth, though.
But he says he likes Beethoven. That's the point. It's what he says. It's not always in Alex's case. What he says is not always the truth.
No, but
I'll trust him on that, though.
Well, anyway, he demonstrates later that regardless of
very
what he
much
says,
so. Yeah.
I think it's
all right.
And the ninth is my favorite.
I'm bored with his argument.
So, now we get to the point of the turning point in the story.
Yeah, he kills that one with a big penis.
Well, that too. But
that's an important piece of art.
I only remember two things for the first time I saw this movie. One, my first vagina, and two,
that's
the one we got killed
big
by
penis.
Big penis.
Well, this is the
with
part,
balls.
Yeah, rocked back and forth.
Well, that's a big deal of the film too. Is that all this artwork? And everything that's around is very erotic in nature, and they created a lot of that stuff. I mean, it's not just that. Look at some of the paintings around in some of the homes.
Yeah, I mean, it fills the background of normal, the normal society. Did it, or was that what Alex saw?
That's
I'm curious.
I would accept that.
I'm curious. Is that what Alex saw, or was that really there? Had society really gotten to the point where it had accepted that? Was that part of the fall of society?
In the UK, I can see that.
Yeah, but at that point, then, is that a commentary on, was that a point of the fall of society?
I don't know if that's necessarily that important for it. I mean,
I don't know. There's a lot that makes up the movie that I think that background, it was too deliberate for it not to be meaningful.
I don't know.
I don't know either. I think it's might just be more
being sexually liberal as a society,
big
indicating
big,
part of its downfall. I don't know.
Coming out of the 70s.
Look at New Zealand.
I just think it's more big picture atmosphere into the 70s. Than anything. I mean,
well, yeah,
coming out of the 60s.
Coming out of the 60s. Right. Exactly.
I wasn't alive during these periods of time. I don't know what that means.
Whatever.
Well, I don't know what the tone of the 60s was. I wasn't there.
I was 6 years old, so I can't really tell.
Where?
Oh, I'm not complaining. I'm living in the time to live in. I used to be flexing over here.
That was 1984.
Pre-you. I was born in 83.
That's right.
Thank you for agreeing with me.
So we're at the turning point of his life where he decides to...
You've been trying to say that for 10 minutes.
He takes the gang's idea up on him after thoroughly humiliating them all and asserting himself as the leader. They decide to rob the old cat lady's place. So in another fit of brilliance, they try first the fake injury routine, which doesn't work. She's suspicious of them, won't let them in, and picks up the phone and calls the police because she's heard about it the next day. Then Alex climbs up the drain pipe to the second story window and enters the room where she's in. And they have their big fight right there. All the time, Alex thinks this is a big gag while she's trying to brain him with a statue of Ludwig von. And he's chasing around with this big plastic palace. And he's eventually...
What?
Palace. It's a classier word for dick. Okay.
Yes. I know what phallus is. That's not junk. What I heard.
Yeah. Big white junk.
Big white junk.
Porcelain junk.
He brains her with it. And thinking he's only knocked her out, he goes back down to the front door where he's meets up with Georgie, who smashes him across the face with a milk bottle. temporarily blinding him, and mainly from the surprise. But apparently they've been waiting and they've been lying in wait for him all this time. And the police are on their way, and he's left there to take the fall.
Yes.
So now he's in the...
Then it's a bigger fall than he thinks it's going to be.
Right.
So,
yeah.
He thinks this whole thing was going to go just like the other night, and they'd had the spoils, but it was a setup all along.
Yep. She was murdered. He gets thrown in jail.
Well, he gets thrown in jail first. We later find out that she died, which he wasn't expecting.
He's in interrogation.
Then the interrogation, they tell him.
Then he gets thrown in jail.
Yeah. Goes through trial, as it was, and he's now in prison.
We don't actually see the trial, so don't really
matter. No, you see the end of it. You see the end of it. Well, you see the
just like a newspapers or something like that. I mean, yeah. You don't really see it.
The montage of headlines there about him.
But after
don't you see like the reading of the verdict or something?
No.
Just the montage of the
I didn't even see any headlines. He just narrates it as he's entering the prison.
There's a couple of like newspaper things.
Oh, okay.
But you know, Catley killer Alex sent him to jail or something like that.
I thought that was when he was released.
Maybe. I mean, I thought they did it both places, but
whatever.
They did news stories later. I know they did it later.
He ends up in jail after an uncomfortably long session of him filling out the paperwork.
Oh, that's one of the best sequences of the film.
It just goes on.
It's one of the best sequences
ever. Yeah, but the interesting thing is he is so compliant. For someone, a guy who was so tough, he seems to fall right into the whole thing. Once he knows the rules that he has to obey, he's as compliant as a kitten.
He only challenges authority when he's not directly facing authority. He's either wearing a mask or he's with his friends. Whenever it's just him alone, he's perfectly docile before and after the treatment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even the first time he was with the...
when he's with Deltoid, I mean, he's that...
Yeah. To the point where Deltoid's almost like feeling him up.
Yeah, that was a rather creepy scene right there.
Yeah, like he was fine there. When he goes and he picks up those two chicks in the music store... It's totally consensual. He's just banging two chicks. Totally normal.
Yeah.
Well, I guess for him. It's not normal for me.
It's normal for us Superman, Darren. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm low on the totem pole these days. So.
You should grow a big beard.
Huh?
You should grow a big beard.
I'm giving up the beard.
Big. I am talking larger
ZZ
than life.
Top big.
I'm working on it.
That's long. I am talking big.
No, I'm working on it.
Never.
You should grow your beard longer than that.
I'm getting the stink eye.
All right, so he's in prison. We fast forward 2 years. Boom.
Fast forward 2 years, and Alex has heard about a treatment that might help accelerate and get him out of jail sooner. And the treatment is called the Ludovico treatment. Alex first has to demonstrate that he's a worthy candidate of this.
He needs to go to the planet Miranda.
To which he does on a prison inspection by the... to which he does on a prison inspection by a new... I don't know if he's
a new
prime
minister. He's a minister of the interior.
The new minister of the interior, and he demonstrates himself as a right candidate. And after that, Alex is released to the scientific research center. And
what's the most bizarre? Oh wait, no, hold on.
Go ahead.
No. I was going to skip the next 20 minutes of the movie. So then they start to condition him.
Well, they essentially brainwash him into disliking violence and sex.
It's horrible.
That whole pulling his eyes open and making him watch was that it?
Yeah, they held his eyes open, made him watch violence and like sex. And then conditioned him to feel nauseous with a drug they administer.
With a drug that they give him in advance. So, they give him to it twice a day.
So they would condition
him. And they also, at the same time, conditioned him to have the same feelings
when he heard the music.
Well,
that was accidental.
That was something that they picked up on that he liked. I'm figuring the minister saw that in his cell and kind of gave him that
information. Really, I got the impression that it was accidental.
It was accidental. Yeah.
It was just on the video.
Yeah,
wasn't
and
it?
They just didn't do anything about it.
Yeah, it was just like a sub. Like it was just the soundtrack to the video that they just happened to be showing him. That was the impression that I got.
Because the head researcher there said, "Oh, we found the conditioning point for him."
Minister of the Interior Adam David Pinilla of the Up in Them Guts Division.
I I don't know. I mean, maybe I've just seen it too much. I've always just seen the minister pick up Beethoven stuff in the cell. And just kind of think maybe that was just something kind of tossed in an addition. Mm-hmm. That maybe that was added into it.
No, because then he starts really starting to panic at that
point. Well, I mean, I could see how it goes both ways, because basically the scientist who's administering this basically does question about that being a... Well, he talks about being a punishment element.
Right, but he agrees. He tells Alex just to endure it. It's for his own good. It wasn't something they intended. It's just a lucky break for them.
Tony's drunk.
What the hell?
Shit. Oh. When he's presented to the scientific community, that whole scene is friggin' hysterical. Because the one guy just comes out, gets all up in his face, and is just beating the crap out of
him.
And just can't fight back. And then the hot chick comes out, and he's like, oh, yes. Oh, no. It's like, then I felt bad for him, because those breasts were right there.
And then after that, Alex is pretty much let loose on the world again. But systematically, he kind of meets up with everything,
everything.
And everybody.
Everything
from the first half of the movie.
From the first half of the movie.
Yeah.
And can't do anything about it.
Yeah, his family rejects him. He runs into the same old bum who eventually now beats him up.
Yeah, a bunch of
him,
bum
him and gets his bum posse.
His parents have adopted
which is broken up by the police, which happens to be two members of his old gang.
Yeah, Dem and Georgie. Yeah.
Who decide they want to get a little comeuppance on him, too. Which is another little thing they throw in there is... The police aren't much better than the gangs.
Yeah, well, the police are just the gang guys older.
Yeah, with the badges now.
Yeah, we grew up and got a proper job.
Far away from some things today either. So,
they take him out into the woods. They attempt to drown him. They beat him, and
they pretty much dump him.
Yeah, just leave him.
And then he's stumbling around trying to get his head back together. And who does he come upon again?
What, the writer?
The first guy.
He saw something familiar. He saw the word home, and he saw something familiar, and he stumbled to the door.
And who would we find out to be? But it's the guy whose wife he raped and killed.
Neo's like, you are on tonight, brother. You are on.
And the thing is, though, he recognizes who this guy is, but he's not so sure if the writer recognizes him, because he's very sympathetic. Oh, you poor boy, you've been
betrayed. And he even said something to the effect that, you know, I wore my mask,
right?
So he couldn't have seen who I was. And
as I watched this again, I knew what ultimately happened, but I wondered. I was like, maybe he doesn't know.
And he doesn't, because he's also.
I don't think he does know.
He doesn't know until.
I don't think he knows until he hears the singing.
Oh no, he doesn't know until he hears the singing.
Right.
Even after the singing, I still didn't know, because the implication is that the guy is part of a super terrorist organization trying to bring down the government.
Well, he's just an agitator.
Yeah, him acting weird and then drugging him and then trying to get him to kill himself isn't necessarily because he's punishing him for killing his wife.
Right.
Well, that's just
he blames him for his wife's suicide.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if it was that or
just the fact that he was an anti-establishment.
Yeah, I could have bought
writer.
He was just trying to embarrass the government that was in power at the time in order to get them tossed out.
And then the minister later is like, "Yeah, that guy wanted to stab you." So
right. Well, because his intention at the beginning was to use Alex and his situation to strike back at the government.
Uh-huh.
And then he realizes exactly who Alex is.
Yeah. And so he still wants to do that, but
he wants to get at him enough.
Yeah.
The idea was to get essentially Alex to commit suicide.
Right.
Because then he's sitting at the table, he was talking to the two other people who showed up later, and they're questioning him about the whole brainwashing technique and how it makes him feel. And he says, "It makes me feel all wanting to commit suicide." He chokes up, can't breathe, and just wants to die.
Yeah.
And they find out, they said, "Well, were you conditioned to, like, to the music we heard at that?" He says, "No, just Beethoven's Ninth." And they use that as the hook to get back at him.
They use that as the noose.
Mm.
And then he attempts to kill himself. And then he wakes up in a hospital.
He jumps out the window and hits the concrete and doesn't
die.
Well,
he really did want to commit suicide.
Yeah, he wanted to kill himself.
Just one quick jump and it would all be over for me.
Maybe a little pain.
Yeah.
With one big go, it'd be all over. And he does do it.
Yep.
but he doesn't die. How inconvenient.
So
that's kind of a bummer.
That is kind of a bummer. You're going to do it, you might as well do it. I mean, come on.
But when he wakes up, of course I didn't die. How could I tell you this story thus far if I had?
So he wakes up in the hospital. He's got like two broken legs and like two broken arms. The dude is effed up.
Yes.
What the hell happens next? His parents come back.
Mm-hmm. And he gives them the...
Yeah, maybe we could have been better parents.
Yeah, and then he's like, yeah, well, I don't really want you back now, so... See ya.
And then the psychologist shows up and gives him a series of tests, and through the series of tests, he finds out, well, the conditioning's been broken.
Yeah, this was awesome.
And he's rather happy to find out, hey, I don't get freaked out anymore about this stuff. I can be myself again.
No time for the old and out, love. I'm here to read the meter. That's the one. Eggy wigs. I will break him.
And at this point, he seems like he's feeling his old self, and guess who decides to show up?
It's the minister. He offers him a job. And then he's a triumphant Beethoven's Ninth while he bangs that chick in the snow and all those people are watching.
Yeah.
That is not how the book ends.
The last voiceover is, now that everything has now come his way, he's got attention, he's got a place in society, his future is assured as long as he plays ball with the government here, and they're going to let him do pretty much anything he wants to do. As long as he does what they want to do. And at the last closing remark, he says, I was cured. I've gotten everything I've wanted again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's not how the book ends. The book ends two different ways. There's like a chapter.
Depends on where you're American or, the American version or the British version.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. The American version ends similar to the movie.
Right. On a down note.
Yeah, where he's like, ha ha, I won. In the British version, like, he goes back to that way for a long time, and then he meets up with the fourth guy.
Pete.
Yeah, Pete. And then Pete's like, yeah, I got a family and a life now.
Yeah, I gave up all that crap.
And he's like, huh, I should try that. And so he does.
Well, his long discussion with Pete was, Pete eventually says, you know, I was into all that stuff, and I just grew up. It didn't appeal to me no more. And he's thinking about this himself and says, well, gee, maybe I should try that growing up thing myself. Because that's the whole idea with the 21st chapter was he was now no longer an adolescent.
Right. So right. I got...
Well, we pretty much went through the whole thing. We spoiled the whole thing, everything.
It's a 38-year-old movie.
Yeah, kind of hard to spoil it.
But we want to compare this thing against kind of like Fight Club and whatnot, since these two movies kind of dovetail each other in some ways.
I think they do a lot.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing is, and I think it speaks more when you look at this 21st chapter that you're talking about, where in the end, you know, the one guy just, you know, finally just grows up.
Yeah.
This was a phase in my life. This was something I had to go through, and now I'm not there anymore.
Well, it changes.
And that's kind of the...
It changes the message of the friggin' movie.
Yeah.
Like, because without it, it's... Okay, so the Clockwork Orange is not being part of... It's what you want to avoid.
Right.
Not something that you grow into. What's your ultimate evolution as a person? Your ultimate evolution in the 21st chapter is that you grow into this cog in society, and then you're content with that. Not so much that you're okay with it, it's just that what you want out of life shifts to that as a natural part of growing up.
Right.
Like, you don't want to just go around banging and effing people up.
Well, also, look at this way. Clockwork Orange, you have a young man who's into all this mayhem who at the end learns that he has to stop doing it. In Fight Club, we have a young adult who says, I've got to create all this mayhem, otherwise society is just, well, it's conditioned me to be docile. I have to create some mayhem or I'll go crazy.
Here's the deal. Helena Bonham Carter is really hot. I'm just going to go ahead and say it.
Yeah. I mean, how she's used, yeah.
I know how I'd use her.
Well, I mean, depending how she's used in the movie.
Yeah. I know how I'd use her. I'd have her dress up as Bellatrix Lestrange and chase me around the house with a wand.
Get that. That's so
What? You've never seen Harry Potter?
No.
Whoa.
I may never see it, you know. I really don't have any interest in it.
I was part of a show last week that tried to lock down the greatest piece of geek media from the decade, and Harry Potter won.
That's sad.
I don't think so.
I think it is.
I've just never had any interest.
You know what the final two were? Harry Potter versus WoW.
I've just never had any interest in Harry Potter.
Show enough.
Society has conditioned them.
WoW, I think WoW should have won, but
WoW be Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, I can see it. WoW's a bigger phenomenon.
It is. It's actually redefined the structure of most games.
Mm-hmm.
Can't speak to any of this.
Harry Potter brought me Snape and Neville Longbottom.
We all know how you feel about Neville Longbottom. How would Neville Longbottom compare to Alex? That's your thesis. Go.
Yeah, go. Going in my pants. We recorded for an hour?
We've recorded for an hour, but we didn't start the episode to like 10-15 minutes in.
Seems to me that there was something I wanted to talk about this movie. But I don't know what it was. A lot of penises.
There was a lot of sexuality in the movie.
A lot more, yeah. Again, I guess one of the things that made it such a controversial film at the time was just the amount of sex that they displayed in there. I mean,
did this have any kind of ratings troubles?
X. Well,
was it?
It was released as X.
It was released as X.
Okay.
And
Midnight Cowboy.
Yeah.
It was only two movies
I
at
read
that
IMDb.
Time.
It was also Oscar nominated too.
Well, it deserved it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it did.
In Britain, it got the X certificate, and in Britain, also Stanley Kubrick removed it from the market after about a year, year and a half.
Why is that?
Why is that? Because basically, over in England, they were figuring this movie was actually being used as an excuse for all sorts of violence that had happened in the country.
Manifesto.
People were saying that they were committing acts of violence based off of what they saw in this film.
Please tell me somebody got killed with a giant penis.
I don't think that happened. But
I don't want to hear that. But I want to hear that.
But there was. But I think there was an attack on a woman similar to like the opening gang fight. It was in this thing that might be close to that.
This may shock you, but rape scenes really don't do it for me.
No, it doesn't shock me. I'm not shocked whatsoever.
The police basically
kind of suggested to Kubrick that because of his situation was kind of almost in a way like the author's situation in the story, which Kubrick lived in England, kind of out of the way with his family, and that this could possibly happen to him. But Kubrick made the request to Warner Brothers to actually pull it from
distribution in England,
and it stayed out of distribution in England for about 25 years.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things they mentioned there, the only way that the British fans could see the movie is they had to get a French address and then have the movie bought in France and shipped to them.
Hmm. Wow.
It was kind of, you had to go through a long, convoluted way of getting a copy of it.
So, yeah, fortunately we didn't have that problem here.
We ever have that problem here?
Well, even after 37 years,
the first Harry Potter book before it was released in the U.S., you had to go to England to get a copy.
No one wanted to read it after the first book anyway.
Oh, the first book was so bad.
Well, when this movie was released, there was a whole bunch of other movies that were similarly breaking out of the Hollywood system at the time. I mean, this wasn't just one of them. Like I say, you had Midnight Cowboy, you had Easy Rider, Woodstock,
Space Nuts.
Space Nuts.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, that was a 2005 release.
Yes. And so,
there would be no podcast anymore.
Shaving Private Ryan. Shaving Ryan's Privates.
So, I really have nothing else to talk about.
Okay.
I mean, I said I did
say.
Soccer, you know
on
what?
My way home.
You know what? Since I brought it up earlier, I did say this was timely.
I was not making fun of you because I didn't think that it's not relevant. I was making fun of you because you used the word timely, as though they had planned for its release in accordance with something else that was going to happen at the same time. And I was like,
one last comment.
That's some foresight. 38 years. That is foresight.
Well, one last comment. What Alex decries now as we consider ultra-violence of 1971, this is more or less everyday occurrence nowadays. And the thing is now they've downplayed so much of the sex part of it,
It's kind of weird. The violence has been amped up, but the sex component has been dialed down.
I've never witnessed a rape.
Yeah, I'm sure you haven't
committed one either, but...
Well, I would like to think that if I committed a rape, I would have witnessed it. But
I don't necessarily agree that now there is so much more violence than there was then. I think now the media portrays violence in a completely different way than they did
at 1971.
In 1971. But this wasn't really a commentary on media.
No,
it really had nothing to do with media. It had to do with society.
And free will and choice.
Yeah. So saying that it had to do with, you know, that the violence is more pronounced now, I don't see that. You know, there's always been violence. There's always been violence in schools. It used to be accepted more than it is now. You know, a fight in the, you know, on the school lawn was just, yeah, we need to break it up. Now it would be expulsions.
Yeah, in public schools.
Expulsions, if we'd have the entire SWAT team out there.
Private schools, that flies.
Yeah.
Public schools are not allowed to touch each other. Very weird.
Yeah, I remember in, you know, when I was in high school just over 20 years ago, it was a known quantity that if you wanted to have a fight after school, that the first thing you do is go have the fight at the lawn of the police station. That's where they would have the fights after school because there were no cops there in the middle of the afternoon on a school day. There's no cops at the police station.
Yeah, they're all out.
They're all out patrolling.
Donuts,
they're all out. They're all out
looking for you, asshole.
Yeah, they are. They are. They were out trying to pick up the kids who were joyriding after school. They weren't hanging out at the cop shop.
That's weird.
It was different in my day.
But and so to say that the violence was projected is more. I think if you're talking in terms of media, it's different. But I don't think in terms of society.
I think the presentation is different because I cannot count very many pieces of media where it's not so much what he does, it is his reactions to what he does. Because he takes physical and expressly told to the viewer pleasure in it. He's like, I am going to go out and rape someone because I want to go out and rape someone.
Yeah.
I will have fun doing it. I think that is something that you just don't see.
Alex is a sociopath.
Yeah.
He's just got buddies. He's got cronies. I mean,
and he tells it eloquently.
Yeah.
And parents that are scared to death of him.
I don't think they were scared to death. I don't think they knew.
I think they were scared.
I think they suspected, but they didn't want
to ask. I tend to look at his parents and think that his parents
His parents had their head in the sand more than anything.
Well, they were god-awful parents and also kind of maybe scared of in the first place, you know?
Yeah, I think they were bad parents in that they didn't care. I think it was more that they didn't care than that they were scared. You know, it was just that, Mom, I'm just not going to...
I need
my rest so that I can be at my best for school today.
Well, you could still,
okay.
still say they were scared in a way of being parents.
Yeah, okay. scared of being parents.
I look
parents,
at that
yeah.
as being that, but also as being scared of him in that sense.
I think they were scared not of taking any responsibility for him.
Well, that's
yeah.
what I'm kind of saying.
Yeah. We agree.
We agree not to disagree.
Exactly. We've come to the same point.
I'm cold.
All right. Wah. The heater kicked off. 45 minutes ago.
No, it's really well made. First time Kubrick was a.
I don't think that you have to add the qualifier of for its time.
Well, no, that's true. It stands up now.
Yeah.
Kubrick was a stills photographer before he became filmmaker, and it kind of shows on almost everything he does.
That does explain a lot about some of the framing of a lot of the shots in this
Absolutely.
Movie.
Absolutely. I mean, Kubrick does a center framing quite a bit, uh-huh. you know, with a 1-point perspective.
Yep.
It explains
the framing of the opening scene. It explains the framing of the threesome, because that's very much shot at that same.
Well, even near the end when the psychiatrist is coming in to give him the test with the pictures, you're first seeing her coming through from a single point perspective, and once she gets there, the camera swings right back around. Alex is laying on his side, and she said, "And it's a single point perspective yet again." He just swings that camera right into from one. One perspective mm-hmm. to another, 1-point perspective.
Yeah, and he does use the I don't know the technical terminology, but he does use the visual
number wang.
The number wang. He does use the number wang very well. He uses the visual to really give you a sense of position in space.
Yes.
I guess is the
point of view. I mean, this
yeah,
is the point of
it's
view.
The pose. Like for the opening shot, it's the pose.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. This is one of those movies that, after having seen it this time, I would love to see the guys that we interviewed for N3 do this movie, because I think they could really amp up a lot of the feeling of being closed in a few of those scenes, like especially when Alex is being subjected to the treatment to make him
docile.
To see what they do with some of that stuff, I think would be really interesting. Because there a lot of it's already there, and they could just amp it up.
Well, another thing to add with this too is this was Kubrick's movie This was Kubrick's movie coming off of 2001: A Space Odyssey, and 2001: A Space Odyssey was kind of infamous for going over budget and over its schedule.
I thought this wasn't his movie coming out. I thought he did some other movie that tanked.
This was the movie that came right off of 2001: A Space Odyssey. And Kubrick was basically wanting to save his reputation and basically say he could make a low budget film. And The Clockwork Orange became that follow up, which came in under budget and
despite the zillions of takes.
Yeah, I mean there wasn't. I can't imagine what much of their budget would have been, except for some of the artwork.
There was one set built. I think they said
four actresses.
I think the one set that was built was the milk bar, and everything else was live locations.
Yeah,
that wasn't like 2001 where every set had to be built.
Right.
Or in some cases in 2001 where Kubrick is talking by a. You know, radio to people in Africa to shoot scenes for.
Sure. Well, and if you look at the scenes in the movie, the locations are all fairly contemporary. I mean, you have, you know, like an old warehouse where the fight happens. You have a theater where they do the scientific presentations. You have a prison, which could be, you know. Any institutional building can double as a prison.
You don't really see bars.
There's a bar in it.
No, I mean...
Oh,
bars on the walls.
Bars, yeah.
Well, and it's more
like a prison. It could just be any building.
Yeah, it's more like any institutional building. And that's kind of the sense they give you. And when you're in a prison, that's kind of the sense the media gives you now when you watch a movie about prisons. They give you the sense that it's just kind of an institutional building, and until you get to the actual living quarters, that's when you see the bars.
Cells.
It's a retirement club.
Yeah. One of the big scenes in prison takes place in a library.
Yeah.
And it looks just like any other library.
It half takes place in a fantasy where he's banging two chicks.
Truth.
Number Wang.
And killing people.
Wanging them.
Love those decimals, Darren.
Mm-hmm. Totally lost.
Because you're focusing on one topic when you should be focusing on 50. Number one from the video we watched.
Or are you trying to catch up with the chat room?
No, I'm not even doing that.
Okay. Yeah, I get
it. It's hilarious because there's no rhyme or reason for when they say number Wang, so just randomly injecting it into conversation is brilliant.
Okay, well, then we'll cease that.
I'm good, Gnome. All right, I'm going to talk to my...
All right.
Thank you for coming.
See you next week is Gremlins.
God, I hope it's on Instagram,
please. And that is... It is not. I don't know. I'm not sure.
That is not. I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know. I don't know because we own it, so I'm not real sure. It shouldn't be hard to come by. We've said that before.
That's it. We're done.
That's it. Okay. Unless you got something else to add.
See it again. It's always worth seeing.
It is worth seeing.
Read the book.
I'll listen to the commentary track with Malcolm McDowell on the disc. The only commentary track by McDowell that's better is the one he does on Caligula.